It's June 15th.
And the word of the day is offside, which means the thing with the flag that takes away goals. Used in a sentence. American soccer fans are going to be yelling about offside for the next month, but they will not be able to explain the rule, especially the part where you're cool if you pretend you're not really involved in the play.
Yeah, and then real soccer fans will patiently explain to us once again that you need that rule, otherwise there would be a whole bunch of scoring.
Yeah, and nobody wants that. Yeah,
that'd be terrible.
I'm no illusions.
I'm Eli Bosnick.
I'm Heath Enright. And broadcasting delayed from America's far center, we are the Skipper Crew.
On this week's episode, SpaceX's IPO is a POS.
We'll explain to Eli why he can't bet against Kaushi's continued existence on Kaushi.
And Knicks fans like me can finally die happy.
You called it in five!
I called it in five. But first, the rest of the intro music.
Joining me for headlines tonight are my fellow skeptic rats, no illusions, and Eli Bosnick. Gentlemen, the World Cup has begun. Any big predictions?
It's hard to say. France seems undercooked in midfield and at fullback. Portugal has a great team, but Ronaldo's ego is going to be their undoing. So maybe Spain? Though Japan could go further than expected, is what Marsh said when I asked him how he thought I was going to get.
Sure.
Yeah, that's funny, because I think that, Eli, I don't have time to talk about this right now. We rely on Nicola's job for most of our income, and her boss really didn't think that was funny, is going to win the World Cup. So we used similar sources.
Okay. You can tell you got that from a British guy, because he thinks France is undercooked anywhere. Which is amazing.
They haven't boiled their team for several hours. It's terrible.
All right. Well, with the crucially important midterms coming up in November, we have a candidate of the day as well. Josh Turek is the Democratic nominee for the Senate seat in Iowa that's being vacated by Joni Ernst, the Republican, who responded to Medicaid cuts by saying, well, we're all going to die. Mm-hmm. So that's fun. She's leaving. Turek is a two-time gold medalist in wheelchair basketball at the Paralympics.
Nice.
Badass. And he's currently polling about even with the GOP candidate in Iowa. Democrats haven't had a senator from Iowa in over a decade. Let's get one. Josh Turek, T-U-R-E-K, turekforiowa.com if you want to check
also,
it out.
Also, I'm pretty sure he's allowed to push Greg Abbott over without it being problematic.
Sure, so sure. Bonus, accomplished dinosaur hunter.
I love it. Yeah, love that guy.
All right, in our lead story tonight, in get a hodl yourself news. There's been lots of talk in recent years about whether it's even possible to be an ethical billionaire. Maybe a really nice guy like George Soros. He made a bunch of money, never cheated, except for the normal like lizard alien banker stuff. Mm-hmm. And he paid all his employees a fair wage along the way. And he became a big philanthropist. He did that. But here's the thing. Even then, it seems like he should have already given away more money if he still has billions, right? And most of the other billionaires, they're not even on the map for a hypothetical positive spin like the one I just gave. Well, we have our first trillionaire now.
Cool.
The Quattro Comas Club. And he's a Roman-saluting sociopath with a broodmare eugenics facility that's actually very bad at eugenics, considering all the Elon Musk DNA, it's been spread
sure,
around.
Sure, yeah.
And thanks to his insane initial public offering, IPO, for SpaceX on Friday, full of market shenanigans, he's worth about $1.1 trillion. He's worth $1,000 billion plus $100 billion.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And still not a single fucking friend in the universe.
Yeah.
Imagine having the GDP of some countries and still nobody tells you about that haircut. That's how unlikable.
Well, it's not even just some countries. It's all but 18 countries. There are 18 countries with GDPs greater than Elon Musk's personal net worth at this point.
It's ridiculous. Here's how the IPO happened. SpaceX has been a private company, and now Elon is raising money by offering shares to the public. It's being traded on the NASDAQ exchange, the second largest marketplace in the world after the New York Stock Exchange. Ahead of the release, big institutional investors like hedge funds were given the opportunity to buy stock at $135 a share. That implies a company that's worth $1.77 trillion.
Huh.
Just for scope, that's more than Saudi Aramco, the giant oil company. Then on Friday morning, the opening price on the NASDAQ was $150. That implies a valuation of $1.96 trillion for SpaceX. Many analysts were saying that's insane, but investors wanted to buy it anyway, and the stock went up to $161 by the end of the first day of trading. So now SpaceX is valued at approximately $2.1 trillion. And that's pretty big, considering the company made approximately negative $5 billion last year.
Really?
And they made about the same number in the first quarter of 2026.
Keith, if you're asking me to break the stock price tank, all you have to do is ask me to buy some. But you're going to have to ask nice, Ethan, right?
Please buy some.
You're going to have to ask nice. That'll do it. We all know that'll do it.
So let me explain the thinking behind the investors here, Heath. Oil, right, which is what Aramco deals with, that's limited. Right. There's only so much. They're going to run out. Space, on the other hand.
Well, that is pretty interesting. It's actually a cool company. I'll get to it. But, like, he sucks so much. So, okay. In fairness, tech companies in the earlier stages often get valued on their revenue alone without looking at the operational costs and therefore the negative number for net profit in this case. The idea is they spend a bunch now and eventually it's a profit. Typical tech companies are valued at maybe 5 or 10 times their annual revenue. Supercharged companies like Nvidia are valued at 20 times annual revenue. And okay, circling back to the asterisk, end of fairness, after that first day of trading, SpaceX was being valued at 112 times their revenue from last year. And the optimists are justifying that insane multiplier by predicting big profits from building AI data centers in outer space and eventually colonizing Mars. Mm. So maybe Elon Musk is in charge of Mars one day and it's going to be great and everybody will make money.
Yeah. I mean, look, if being fired from the White House, booted from various companies' boards, and turning himself into an international pariah has taught us anything, it is that Elon Musk's future looks bright.
Yeah.
So let's just put all our chips.
Look at Twitter. I need to remind everybody that this is the same man who got caught buying his way onto a high scoreboard in a video game to look badass to Joe Rogan. Right? That's the guy $1 trillion worth of idiots are counting on to colonize Mars, which, by the way, he promised to have done in 2022.
Yeah. He's still working on that, like, $2 trillion of cuts with Doge, too. Mm-hmm. He's getting there on his stuff.
Sure.
Yeah. And just a quick note on the shenanigans regarding the makeup of the SpaceX company before we get to the other shenanigans involving the IPO. The part of SpaceX that makes sense, the satellite business, can make money. But the corporation also includes a bunch of Elon Musk failures that just got smushed inside of SpaceX. For example, Twitter. Most people don't know this, but Twitter is just part of SpaceX now. So if you buy the stock for SpaceX, you're buying a piece of online hot garbage as well. And you're also buying a bunch of Cybertrucks.
Really?
Those fucking 8-bit El Caminos did not do well. Shocking. So to hide the failure, Tesla sold about $100 million worth of Cybertrucks to SpaceX last year.
Really?
Is that a Ponzi scheme? Not exactly, but also, it's a scheme, though.
Okay. Yeah. But bright side, though, that means that there are now 100% NASA nerds who have dedicated their lives to exploring the universe and benefiting humanity forever, who are being forced to drive around in the company Cybertruck. Right? Just everyone flips them off and they're like, I agree. It's for work. I agree. You can't hear me.
Fuck. The panel flew off while I was driving.
Soundproof
5 miles an hour.
Is why.
Well, so, okay. All right. But maybe, though, he's just belatedly taking the advice of every actual designer that ever got a look at those trucks and having them yeeted into the sun en masse.
Hey,
ooh, yeah.
That'll work. All right. Well, that brings us to the market shenanigans involving index funds. I'll skip all the nerd details. Here's the basic idea. There's a big index called the NASDAQ 100 that represents stocks of 100 big companies on the NASDAQ exchange. If a company becomes part of that list, it means lots of money just automatically goes into buying the stock. Like if you're a public school teacher or a police officer, firefighter, or lots of other jobs that might have retirement accounts, the pension fund or retirement fund for you and all your coworkers often has a bunch of money invested in the NASDAQ 100 companies. Normally, NASDAQ has a bunch of rules to decide what companies, what stocks get to be part of that 100. But they basically wrote a new set of rules just recently, just by chance. It's so crazy. That says, like, also any rocket company with a name that contains the new stupid title of a failing social media company that's contained inside the rocket company and the owner has a child named after that same thing because it's fucking stupid. So even if all these big pension funds and investment companies start making adjustments, they could, but that takes a while. Even if that happens, SpaceX is getting a whole bunch of automatic stock support right away. If you have any money invested for retirement, there's a good chance your money is part of that. It's a giant scam that is 100% legal, but it's a fucking scam.
Yeah. Right. Well, so you know how like invest in mortgages was great advice until all the money people knew that we knew that it was good advice, so they turned it into a scam. Right. They're doing that with index funds now.
Yeah. And hey, Heath, real quick question. What will happen to my retirement if one of those 100 companies is a massive overvalued failure? I'm asking for a friend whose career will die when his coworker has a heart attack because he won't turn on his air conditioner. Just real quick.
Okay. Well, you don't have any retirement stuff saved up. It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter is the answer for you. But lots of people, you're just kind of fucked into helping this. One other quick note. Elon Musk is the biggest shareholder with about 45% of the stock in SpaceX. And he's locked up from selling shares for 366 days from the IPO date. That 366-day period just happens to end 2 days before the NASDAQ 100 would do a rebalance of the index on June 15th of next year. So, theoretically, if SpaceX was about to get dropped from that list and the stock was overvalued and somebody in the company might know that, I don't know, maybe the CEO, that person could sell a huge chunk at the inflated price right before it loses all that artificial value from being part of the index. That's a possible thing that could happen.
Oh, so the rules of this horse race that my retirement is based on is Elon gets to change what horse he's betting on about 3 feet from the finish line.
Yeah.
That's cool.
Yeah. So all that being said, there's a bit of nuance here.
Boo! And
I know lots of idiots hate that. You hate nuance, but you should stop hating that. Let's fucking be better about this.
No.
So much like just about everyone listening right now, I also hate Elon Musk. He might be the worst person, like the actual worst person. If he's a person, he might be the worst one. But I like the general idea of space travel and electric vehicles, and he happens to be in charge of companies that are doing both of those things. So we can root for advances in rocket science and EV technology, and also roast the CEO of those companies for being a neo-Nazi who's most likely covered in urine right now. We can hold both of those in our hand at the same time and then wash our hand.
Yeah. Yeah, right. The key to doing away with billionaires isn't actually eating them. Elon Musk would taste like piss and polyurethane. We can just tax the motherfuckers and get all those benefits with none of the downside.
There you go. It's so simple. And speaking of companies, we also have one with less urine. So we're going to take a quick break. You're welcome. For a word from our sponsor, Quince. Dude, please turn it off.
I don't know what you're talking about.
You do, though.
Hey, guys.
You know.
What's going on?
Eli's walking around with a fan under his shirt.
No, I'm not.
Dude, we can see the plug.
Eli, are you trying to spread your pheromones again? Because we talked about this, man.
Okay. One, you guys only stopped me from doing that because your wives were entranced by my musk. And two, no, it's just now that it's summer, I tend to get a little warm and sweaty. And so the alleged fan helps cool me off.
Not alleged.
Well, Eli, everyone needs to change how they dress when summer rolls around. That's why there's Quince.
What's Quince.
No, damn it, I was tangled in the cord, allegedly.
Quince focuses on high-quality essentials that feel and look amazing. Think breathable linen and soft organic cotton, well-made basics, but without the luxury markup. It's that rare balance where everything feels elevated but still effortless.
Wow. How do they do that?
Oh, it's got my shirt!
Quince works directly with ethical factories and cuts out the middlemen, so you're paying for quality, not brand markup. And Quince goes beyond clothing. Custom upholstered sofas, ceramic cookware, premium bedding. It's the kind of brand you end up recommending to everyone for everything.
Okay. Have you actually tried it?
I sure have. When I read that Quince's European linen pants and shirts were so affordable, I got myself a couple of sets. Now I wear them almost every walk. That's why I, no illusions, personally endorse Quince.
Well, what do you pull the cord out of the wall?
All right, I'm sold. Where do I sign up?
Elevate your summer wardrobe. Go to quince.com/skeptograph for free shipping on your order and 365-day returns. Now available in Canada, too. That's quince.com/skeptograph for free shipping and 365-day returns. quince.com/skeptograph.
All right, thanks. So, Eli, what do you say? You gonna buy some Quince?
Yep, sure, maybe.
Catch your penis in the fan and mutilate it?
Yes.
I'll call 911.
You're gonna want to use Lucinda's phone. They blocked the house.
Yeah, smart.
And we're back. Next up in headlines in Cal She What You Did There news. As we sort through the muck, looking for fresh water and the remnants of what will have been our civilization, one of the hardest things to explain to the cannibal mutants before they eat us will have been prediction markets. Websites like Kalshi and Polymarket, where, barely disguised as stock trading platforms, we allowed ourselves to bet on things like wars, assassination attempts, and yes, nuclear holocaust.
Right. Unlike actual stock exchanges where you're betting on the wholesome business fundamentals of plucky, gumption-filled corporations and nothing else, that's all you're betting on. I know there's a difference, but like, it's not enough. I need there to be a bigger difference.
I need you to be able to delineate a bigger difference. Yeah, yeah. The problem with somebody winning $100 on an I'm going to kill Frank tomorrow bet isn't that anybody was dumb enough to take the bet.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. Well, Trump's Commodity Futures Trading Commission realized that they were missing out on a piece of the pie this week. So they wrote us a book about all the things they're going to do about it. The CFTC released a 267-page proposal that would rework and more carefully define some of the rules governing prediction markets and the types of events they can offer. First and foremost, it would leave most sports betting open because if the American people don't see or hear a FanDuel ad every 30 seconds, we will die. But it also did propose some restrictions on bets involving injuries and fan interactions because, let's face it, if I can bet $1 million that I'm going to get Travis Kelce to kick me in the nuts, I'm going to get Travis Kelce to kick me in the nuts.
That's exciting. You could turn your 401k, which I think is, it's three Christian comic books that are like rare or whatever. You could turn that into like nine Christian comic books that are rare if you get good odds.
All right. So
$5.
For whatever it's worth, Eli, I don't have $1 million, but if like Kelce kicking you in the nuts are on the, I might raise $1 million. Like I'm willing to slide pieces of paper back and forth with you on this.
I'm sold. Just write a number. Taylor Swift probably has to be nice to me at the apology. This is a win.
I feel like you're getting kicked by her too, which is kind of a bonus.
That's a part of it, right? $2 million. She joins in because it's so fun to kick me.
Yeah, it's a parlay at that point. Yeah. It's a parlay. Stupid. Go ahead.
So the new rules would outlaw several types of event contracts that are unrelated to sports, including those involving war, assassinations, or acts of terrorism. Those bets have led to a couple of sticky situations, like a Google employee who made $1.2 million by using insider information on Google Trends, or back in April when authorities indicted a soldier who made a $400,000 profit on Polymarket betting on the timing of Venezuelan President Nicolas Maduro's capture because he was part of the operation that carried it out.
Yep.
Yeah. Well, luckily for Pete Hegseth, the bets he was going to make actually would have lost.
Yes.
Because he's an idiot. And authorities probably didn't know what to do about, like, Is there a rule? Insider stupid? Can we indict him for insider stupid?
Yeah, the dude can't run sideways. There was never any real danger in this shit.
Spoilers. But don't worry. These companies are doing the right thing, and they have added a line of code to their betting system. Cauchy's response to all of this was to start requiring some users to disclose their employer before placing trades in high-risk markets, because the thing standing between a special forces operator and financial fraud is now a form that asks, where do you work?
U.S. government.
Yeah. Side note, that form would not actually stop someone from betting and destabilizing world events, but it would stop Cauchy from having to pay out. So they're not even doing good at the bad thing they're not doing.
Well, fortunately, nobody knows people with different jobs than
right. That. Yeah. Yeah. No, exactly. It's nice to know, though, that they're trying to bet on assassinations ethically. Maybe they're not getting there, but they're trying. Damn it.
Yeah. There is, however, one bright side to all of this, podcast listener, which is that prediction markets often yield incredible justice. Like, spoiler for the Posnick Sports Hour, in
a
moment when
pretty
Knicks
excited about whatever that is
made an incredible comeback during game four and lost Wall Street douches who thought they could jump on an easy win, literally millions of dollars.
Yeah.
What I'm saying is gambling is bad, but sometimes it's bad for assholes, too. You know what I'm saying?
That's what you get for betting against the Knicks.
That's right.
Fuckers. And in to be or not to be news, there's a level of wrong where you start to think that the very fact that the other guy is wrong might make you right. Like when religious people think they can prove the existence of Jesus by poking holes in evolution. And that level of wrongness sits at the very heart of the UFO phenomenon. Right, because it's impossible not to believe in UFOs. We all agree that things can fly without being identified.
Not me. I'm a real skeptic.
Okay, well, everybody, but
they've
Eli,
all been identified.
Everything is known.
It's a flying object. That's an identity.
I call it a UFO.
I name it Bug.
But an awful lot of people seem to think that there's a ticking clock on identifying flying objects that lands on alien spaceship if skeptics can't explain it fast enough. And we were reminded of that yet again over the weekend as the Pentagon released its third tranche of UFO files in their continued effort to give conspiracy theories some non-Epstein shit to focus on.
Oh, don't worry, Noah. The conspiracy theorists only cared about the Epstein files when it wasn't very clearly about the president they voted for and all of his friends. So,
Holy shit. God, I almost forgot about the Epstein files. Oh, my God. It's like a pretty big thing that's been happening. Quick little diversion. I think Donald Trump might have raped some children. And the response from the administration was to figure out how to spin that in the media. We got a bunch more details last week about this stuff from Maggie Haberman and Jonathan Swan at the New York Times. Just amazing journalists, great publication that Eli whines about all the time. And apparently the entire administration is both dumber and more evil than we thought. For example, Pam Bondi, you remember when she gave the binders to like DC toilet fuck and those other conspiracy theory influencers last spring. And right after that happened, White House people were like, hey, Pam, real quick, did you check if Donald Trump was like mentioned right away in the stuff he just gave out? And she was like, what? And he had a press conference in like 2 hours with Keir Starmer. So they panicked. So we got a bunch of lying and covering up right after that. And then in July, when they heard a really bad story was about to come out, including a fuck poem from Trump to Epstein with a naked lady and a pube signature, the administration assembled in the Situation Room. That's the place where they went on like 9/11 or, you know, to plan the raid that got bin Laden. But this time it was to do media strategy, like, you know, podcasts and stuff, not help the victims to find justice, to be clear, or anything like that ever. They were doing this all summer in the sit room, and I'm assuming ever since. And at one of those meetings, J.D. Vance suggested, I know what to do. I'm going to go on Rogan and smooth this all over.
Oh, do that to Cecil. Do that to Cecil.
Chance Dance Vance was pretty sure the Epstein thing, it would only be like a couple of questions with Rogan. And then Joe Rogan would want to focus the rest of those, you know, 4 hours of podcasting on Donald Trump's amazing policies to help working families. So, yeah, that all happened. And we're going to get a whole book about it from those two authors. Looking forward to it. God, wow. They almost snuck that whole thing with the Epstein files past us with all the, you know, distracting, amazing alien videos or whatever they put out in that tranche. Or highly classified water droplets that were on a camera that one time.
Okay, Heath, you don't just get to do another headline because we mentioned the Epstein files, okay?
Yes, I do.
You're lucky I don't know things about stuff, or I would totally do that to you during your next headline. I'd be like, oh, no, it's so funny you should mention, because
You don't read articles.
No, it's no problem. Like, he transitioned back from the child rape to the UFO, so it all works out seamlessly.
All comes together. You know? Yeah. Weave.
So all of these releases stem from an executive order that Trump signed in February of 2026, right about the time that they were supposed to release the other half of the Epstein files that still remain unreleased. And so far, three tranches of UFO files have come out, two last month and one on this past Friday. And honestly, this latest release has the distinct feel of like the bowl that you scrape together when you're out of weed, but there's still some shake that got dropped on the carpet and a little bit on those stems there.
I could scrape some resin with this hairpin.
Yeah, right. No, yeah, it contained 53 floor bud resin documents, 10 images, most of which were computer generated. This is what that would have looked like, shit, based on witness descriptions. 6 videos, 2 of which were the same, and 3 audio recordings.
Also, this stapler probably saw some alien stuff.
Yeah.
We're releasing this stapler to the American people.
Right, right. So, yeah, so
what happened with the Epstein files?
Heath, goddammit, stop doing a headline in the middle of our release. So, let him in here? Probably the New York Times' best friends.
So, yeah, so despite only being the second most disappointing release of UFO videos this weekend, sorry, Spielberg. Looks like Bridge of Spies will remain your last good one. Nothing on them was remotely convincing. One of them either shows a light moving erratically in the sky or a camera moving erratically as a light stands still. Now, you can think it is the former right up until a second light appears and moves in precisely the same herks and jerks as the first one.
They're doing a choreography.
Right, yeah, no. So a guy with Parkinson's tried to get a picture of a street lamp. So another one shows a pair of lights moving in a way that no human craft could possibly move. Except for a drone. A drone could do that. A third was almost certainly just the moon reflected in a fucking pond.
Okay, but listen, then teens started skinny dipping in the surface of the spaceship.
Fuck, that one's Lutnick in a hot tub on the island. God, release another video. Do the P-tape. Release the P-tape. Throw a smoke bomb.
J.D. Vance, you have to fight in the octagon during the big wrestle.
You have to fight the Pope.
You have to fight the Pope.
So, okay.
Guys.
I would pay so much for that pay-per-view.
Right? That one I would have paid for, yeah.
I'm sliding Travis Kelce, kicking me in the nuts, back across the table. You turn it over. J.D. Vance fights the Pope in the octagon.
Yeah, there you go. There you go. So, okay.
I think they're getting a thunderstorm right now for their
stupid
thing. They
are. It is raining on their stupid thing right now. It's very funny.
So there were also, as I mentioned, a couple of computer-generated images based on testimonials about UFOs, and they were mostly noteworthy for how bad the FBI is at digitally rendering shit. Like we got better from the Discovery Channel in 1997. One of them looks like a bad cutscene from a PS1 game that you already regret wasting your money on. The other is just a still photo that looks like somebody has taped a UFO picture onto a placemat. And that one, by the way, was meant to represent a known phenomenon wherein light reflects off the snow and then back from the bottom of a cloud. So, like, light is what we call that. Yeah, so crude rendering of light reflected off cloud was included in this latest trench.
Alien yells at cloud.
Also, sometimes you're standing under an AC vent and it gets cold for no reason. That might be ghost aliens have crashed.
Also, the other day I was at the mall. I was staring at this poster. A sailboat just fucking appears like inside the poster.
It was crazy. Real
jumped
thing.
Right out of it.
And then it went away.
I could touch it.
And look, if you need more of an indication of how desperate they were here, the videos from the last two releases, they were like military shit, right? They were videos taken from military aircraft, or they were satellite images, or they were taken by military personnel. But the only four actual like UFO videos in this release were just taken by fucking random people with their cell phone cameras. And it would be genuinely hard to overstate how unimpressive they are. One of them is very clearly two drones with red lights on them, and they don't look at all mysteriously until the guy like zooms in, the person filming zooms way in, and that adds like a weird halo around it, and that is obviously a photographic effect. Right. Well, I mean, either it's an artifact or the two UFOs turned on their mysterious halo shields exactly when that guy zoomed in.
He's gaining on us. Nope, that was photons. Damn it.
So, yeah. So long story short, there are still between 2 and 2.5 million unreleased documents in the Epstein files that Trump was legally required to make public no later than December 19th of last year. And we haven't forgotten about that.
And in gold-fingered news.
Oh, that's good.
CIA officer, well, former, David Rush got caught with a giant stash of gold bars in his house, and he got fired. Rush was running a top secret program that needed a bunch of gold bars and foreign currency, and somehow he just got that handed to him. But it turns out it was all a big lie, much like all the details of David Rush's life story that he made up to get his job in the first place.
I would love for the CIA to check references as robustly as, say, Arby's does.
Yeah,
that'd be great.
It would also be nice if they offered curly fries. But hey, CIA, I too am running an operation that requires a big pile of gold bars in foreign currency. So give me a ring.
So here's the backstory on Rush. He was a firefighter. He was in the Navy, and he worked for the CIA. Those are the real things. Pretty much everything else he made up. When he applied for the job at the CIA, he fabricated his academic record and his military record, including a claim that he was an ace pilot. And he told his coworkers that he graduated at the top of his class at Top Gun, the Navy fighter pilot school. He did not.
Oh.
He did not. He saw zero combat in the Navy, and he doesn't even have a pilot's license. Well, despite all those lies, he passed the background checks for the fire department and the CIA. Officials were especially baffled that he managed to pass the polygraph at the CIA. It's like the machine was completely broken or something. I don't know. He just got lucky.
Right. No, I've mentioned this before, but I want to remind everybody that I once passed a polygraph test by pretending I wasn't lying.
Yeah. Guys, I'm not even comfortable with the fact that he made it to the firemen with those
lies. Yes, right.
And those guys mostly just show up to tell you that you're right about your baby being dead. So, like, I really need focus on.
Okay. So everyone in his fire department was shocked by the news. He worked with several military veterans in that fire department, and they all said his stories about being in the military checked out. According to an Army veteran that he worked with, they talked about fighter jet stuff all the time, and nothing seemed fishy. For example, Rush said his call sign was Dumpster, and that's because he got drunk one time and ended up in a dumpster. Rush also told the Army guy, and this is an exact quote, "Being a fighter pilot is the easiest job in the world. You push the stick forward, the ground gets bigger. You pull the stick back, the ground gets further away." Exact quote.
I would like someone to call that guy's references now. What is happening? Yeah. I need everyone. We're doing a full
baffling
inquisition.
Picturing that guy, he's doing the math in his head, and he's going like, that checks out. That
hold
does
on,
check
would,
out.
Yeah, and then it would be like further away. Further all right. Away. All right. Hold on, I got to go into my map. No, it does. Wow. Okay. Yeah. So how does this guy,
Fox 64, just to double check, man.
How does this guy become a high level CIA officer? Well, he definitely got some help from Steve Feinberg, the Deputy Secretary of Defense, serving under Pete Hegseth since last year. Feinberg is a billionaire investment banker. He was the head of the President's Intelligence Advisory Board during the first term of Trump. And he was the CEO at Cerberus Capital, named after the three-headed demon dog who guards the door to the underworld. According to reports from NBC News, Feinberg had a close professional relationship with Rush over the years, including during Trump 1, and Feinberg helped get a big assignment for Rush as part of a joint program between the CIA and the Pentagon that was focused on spying on China. Or, in the words of Pentagon spokesman Sean Parnell last week, quote, Feinberg never supported Mr. Rush's career at any point in his life. Parnell also added, they never had a close relationship of any kind. It really seems like somebody's lying here.
Yeah. It is weird that he hedged that with the modifier close, though, right?
No. Well, let me explain. He got him the job, but he thought he was shitty at it. And they never got brunch, just the two of them. It was always like when the whole friend group got together, you know?
Oh, okay.
Did they sit next to each other during those brunches? They did not. They did not.
Yeah. Not once. And never did the, like, I'll get this, you get that, and we'll split. Not once. Not one time.
Love huevos rancheros. Here's how we get to the gold bars. Rush is firmly established as a top CIA officer, thanks to a medium relationship with somebody, not necessarily a close one.
Just straight up and normal.
Rush created a project that was related to the continuity of government operations.
Oh, that sounds important.
That's what he said. Yeah, yeah. He briefed two other CIA people about it, but it was highly classified, so they couldn't talk about it with anybody else. Then he requested a bunch of gold bars that he needed for that operation, and one of those two CIA people approved the transfer of the gold bars. Well, that entire project never existed at all, entirely made up. But the gold bars, they existed. They were real. And that's how Rush ended up with 303 gold bars in his house worth about $40 million. When the FBI did the raid, they also found about $2 million in currency and several dozen luxury watches.
Okay, he told us he was going to turn them into sleep dart shooters, and that's not cool. That's a betrayal. Okay. I was excited.
All right, so it turns out, according to my research, that the post-apocalyptic cannibal hordes are going to be all about some high-fashion timepieces as well. So it's going to be gold bars, fancy watches, and cowrie shells.
Everybody's convinced when it's like warlord time, you're going to be carrying around gold bars and you're going to be crushing it. You're just going to have them on your little radio flyer wagon, just squeaking around doing transactions.
Just a bunch of empty
shaving
shelters.
A little bit off.
Yeah, that's about an ounce, I think.
Use
right?
the digital scale that still works now in the after times to check I gave you enough of the gold bar.
You can have as much gold as you can grab with one hand. How about that? We'll call it there. We'll call it even. So now Rush is in jail and he's under investigation by the FBI. I'm sure Kash Patel is going to do a great job on that. Speaking of which, the only charges against David Rush at the moment are that he embellished his academic record and that he received about $77,000 in military leave pay when he falsely claimed he was in the Navy Reserve after leaving active duty in 2015. It feels like he's being, I don't know how this happened. Like, is he being hailed as the greatest liar of all time inside our government full of jealous people who aren't quite as good at being the greatest liar of all time, but they like him?
Also, is military pay on the honor system?
It appears that maybe it is.
He told the Navy, no, I'm in the reserve. You owe me money.
The CIA background check is apparently on the fucking honor system.
Right.
I don't know what's happening.
Well, we asked the Navy, and the Navy said to go ask mom, and the mom said go ask the Navy. That's how it works.
That's peer review.
And in squeeze play news, podcast listener, as the resident jock of the podcast, the sports nut, the ballaholic, if you will.
What's a squeeze play?
I don't know.
What sport is it in?
Soccer.
No.
Yeah. You know that I use these brief moments where you and I get to speak to each other outside the realms of skepticism and atheist activism to fill you in on what you need to know about the world of El Sportos, which is why I'd like to introduce a brand new segment, the Bosnick Sports Hour.
Screening out, screening out.
Eli, I told you that your 40-minute monologue on why close-up magic should be an Olympic event is at the bottom of the sea, and that's where it will stay. I just want to reiterate that up front.
Maybe if enough patrons reach out and ask
no,
it's for that video footage, maybe if they rise up.
They would have to release the Kraken.
Maybe the Kraken likes magic. He's Jewish. So, our first story in the world of sports comes from Gay Paris.
There's so much in that. Go ahead.
Where 21-year-old Arthur Guyet made his French Open debut by nearly becoming the first person in the 129-year history of the Roland Garros to shit himself on national television. So, mid-match, during a set, not between sets, which is apparently the gentleman's hour to drop kids off at the pool, Gay approached the chair umpire and says, quote, "I need to go to the bathroom. I can't move anymore. I'm going to shit on the fucking court."
Phenomenal.
So, the umpire does not go, "Yeah, you can go shit." He initiates an administrative review.
Oh, does that happen quickly?
No, it does not. So and then a pair of officials appeared to assess the medical reason for the timeout. He was eventually allowed to go, but only after he completed the current game, which he lost because he was trying not to shit his pants.
Sure.
Then he went and shat. And then he came back and lost all the rest of his sets.
All right, but what if it turned out that, like, needing to shit really bad was how he unlocked his tennis superpowers?
That was
right?
His fucking rookie of the year, but it's his butthole instead of his arm?
Yeah,
absolutely.
Exactly.
Okay, so it was on clay. That's kind of like a litter box. I feel like it wouldn't have been that bad.
Yes.
You just scoop it, it comes all up.
Exactly. Get a ball, kid. They could do it.
You spread some clay over the top of that little spot, you're fine.
But they run out there really quick with their little scooper.
Exactly,
yeah.
Yes.
Back, yeah.
But may I say, too gay, as a fellow IBS survivor.
Survivor?
Mm-hmm. Who once farted so bad during a live show that
please don't
asked,
talk about this.
He asked me if I had shat my pants when we got backstage.
Yeah. And then Eli lied and said no.
Oh, it's because I convinced Eli, I convinced Heath, I'm like, hey, no, you're the tallest, so you should sit in the middle and we should be on either side of you. It's just like visually, it makes more sense that way.
Didn't say I was going to be in the blast radius. It's
fine. Hazard pay.
It's like at SeaWorld where you have to have the little splash.
The little splash.
Up,
yes, exactly.
It's like a Gallagher show next to Eli.
But with my ass.
But with shit instead of watermelons. He does have the big hammer.
Yes, I do. To him I say, you are not invisible. You are seen, you are heard, and you will be revenged.
Revenged?
You're revenging right now? You're making a weird face like you might be revenging just
listeners,
in place.
Eli is now visibly revenge shitting himself in what seems to be the belief that he can make this Zoom call stink at Heath and I.
I believe in me.
You have to, Eli, you have to do the rest of the story after the set. You can leave.
All right, next up. Baseball players say some wacky stuff. There's pretty much everything that came out of John Rocker's mouth. There's the time Sammy Sosa was like, "No, my head is naturally this size." And this week...
this is a perfectly normal age to have pimples.
Him and McGuire were just fucking bobbleheads of themselves, and they're winning this home run race, and everybody's like, yeah, it's probably just a coincidence.
One of them normal 38-year-old acne breakouts.
Just a normal guy with a normal-sized head. Anyways, let me swing at the baseball. My heart's gonna explode. No. This week, Phillies first baseman Bryce Harper posted a Get Ready With Me TikTok from a San Diego hotel room that will haunt my dreams forever. In it, Harper, all-star, World Series champion, future Hall of Famer, showed the world that he squeezes toothpaste directly from the tube onto his tongue.
Hitler.
Before he begins brushing his teeth. Not onto the toothbrush. Into his mouth, on his tongue, from the tube, like in a movie where a monkey gets into a fancy hotel room.
Okay, if a movie needed to show me a serial killer in Act One, that would do it right there. Yeah, show me him doing
that. Sure, yeah, yeah.
And honestly, I don't mean like the act itself, although that would do it for sure. I mean a person who chose to post that video of himself
exactly.
on purpose.
Right, yeah, no, there are
insane.
There's a ton of shit that I do in the bathroom that people would find off-putting. Right, and not this off-putting, but off-putting nonetheless. But I don't live stream any of that stuff.
No, you do not.
He should be banned from the Hall of Fame
yes.
in advance.
Absolutely.
Pete Rose just bet on games.
I was just going to say, if we're going to ban Pete Rose, we should ban this motherfucker. Okay, best part of the story is that later that week, when they went against the Padres, the Padres put Harper's toothpaste apostasy on the Jumbotron as a fun fact when he came up to bat. So that's some elite level heckling. I'll
no,
say.
It
that's
is.
Good work.
It is.
Honestly, he could remove his teeth with pliers one by one and then rub those teeth in a pile of toothpaste and then snap them back in. I'd be less disturbed than what he actually did.
It's way better. Yeah. And look, podcast listener, I would normally close the Bosnick Sports Hour right there. That's a complete week. Two perfectly strange stories, but I need to talk to you about the New York Knicks. As I mentioned, might be possible on our last show, Donald Trump attended Game 3 of the NBA Finals at Madison Square Garden, becoming the first sitting president to attend an NBA Finals game. Outside, watch parties were canceled. Ticket holders waited 2 hours to get inside. No bags were allowed. And when Trump appeared on the Jumbotron during the national anthem, Madison Square Garden booed him so loudly, you could hear it on TV. For those of you unfamiliar with sports on TV, let me explain to you how incredibly difficult that is. All the technology in the building is designed so that you can't hear the people in the stands.
Well, they if they choose, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. They have directional microphones and sound blocking panels and algorithmic technology that cuts down audience noise. And the boos for Donald Trump were still so loud that they are literally the only thing you can hear during the broadcast.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I love the TV execs clearly tried to minimize the booing by showing Trump during the national anthem. They're
right.
Like, oh, that's a good solemn national moment. We'll do it during the national anthem. And everyone at MSG was like, fuck the song. Nobody cares. Boo, Nazi, Nazi, boo.
Well,
love New York.
And then they cut to the flag and the booing stops immediately. And then they cut back to Trump and the booing starts immediately. And then they cut away. It's like as if the director wanted to help make it exactly clear to everyone what everybody was booing.
Exactly, yeah. Yes. So as predicted, he jinxed it. The Knicks lost. 13-game playoff win streak gone. Trump got on Air Force One, told reporters it had been mostly cheers.
Yes.
Which, to be fair, he was asleep, so that's probably what he dreamed happened.
Seriously, I haven't been this proud to be from New York since, do you remember when everyone in Yankee Stadium tried to punch Ted Cruz in the face when he was there?
Simultaneously, that was pretty great.
Yeah.
And then Game 4 happened. Down 29 points in the NBA Finals, the Spurs scored 76 points in the first half on 14 three-pointers.
And 34 other points.
The Knicks.
They often go by the plural Spurs. Go ahead.
Thank you. The Knicks looked like a team whose owner had personally invited the president to come sit in his box and jinx them. And then the second half happened, and OG Anunoby scored 33 points, whatever, and with 12 seconds left, he blocked De'Aaron Fox without fouling,
Fox.
And with 1.2 seconds left, he tipped in the game winner, 107-106, greatest comeback in NBA Finals history.
Greatest
series
basketball
lead.
Game in history.
Yes.
Series lead
yes.
3-1,
yeah.
One win from the first championship in 53 years. Podcast listener, I don't believe in curses. But I believe in stories. And this week, the story was alive in Madison Square Garden. Also, we won Game 5 on Saturday. That was fun,
too.
Yeah,
no,
they won the whole thing.
Like, yeah. Mm-hmm.
I think you're uniquely qualified to be a sports reporter.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Because you love stories.
Because of them.
what I said. We're going with what I said.
Yeah. The other thing was muted, so we kind of have to. Yeah.
No way to know.
And finally tonight, in Exercise Matters news, Pete Hegseth continued to plumb new depths of humiliation when yet another embarrassing video of him working out went viral. This marks the third time he's been caught in a satirical pantomime of exercise, or the fucking fourth and fifth, depending on whether we're going by viral video or by specific exercise, and marks at least the fourth historically embarrassing workout video to come from this administration.
Who is he watching these videos with afterwards that it's not resulting in an of mice and men situation? And how do I get friends that supportive?
Yeah, right?
Honestly, Pete's entire career is the, like, getting put on the fridge out of pity by gentle parents.
Yes.
No, it doesn't belong there.
So let's just go back through Pete's storied history in this regard. Now, to be clear, Pete Hegseth looks to be in pretty good shape, right? So the assumption going into things would be that he'd be the kind of guy who would be pretty familiar with things like how to do a push-up without looking like you're unenthusiastically fucking a Smurf. But
yeah, look enthusiastic, you piece of
shit. Yeah, right? But then he decided to do an arm strength challenge on video with septuagenarian sewage diver Robert Kennedy Jr., in which he fucked the aforementioned Smurf and then also hung limply from a pull-up bar and then thrust his hips back and forth like a salmon out of water, as though somehow that was going to provide an upward motion.
Okay, you know how when an old guy can't do a thing he used to be able to do, so his body just starts trying to, like, phase through matter
because
he can't exist in a world where he can't do a kickflip anymore.
I sure do, Eli.
It's like that, except Pete Hegseth could never do a pull-up.
Yeah, right, except for he was lying about being able to do a kickflip, yes.
Honestly, I think he needs a bottle of Cash Patel whiskey on a stick and a string, like
oh, there you go, lifting. Yeah,
sure. I think he might do one more pull-up at least.
Sure, yeah. Okay, but so there was nearly a year of silence on this front. So, you know, one might have reasonably assumed that Pete had learned his lesson and decided to leave working out on video with RFK Jr. to fitter individuals, like 55-year-old human version of converting a Coke can into a crack pipe Kid Rock. But then, last week, a new video arose, which I delightedly shared with Heath and Eli in a Patreon bonus outtake, in which Pete Hegseth tries some kind of knee karaoke drill or something. This, like, it's an exercise where you're facing forward and moving sideways. You raise your knee up. It's the kind of thing that you it's the shit that you teach 9-year-olds in soccer practice to work on hip motion. And somehow, when Pete Hegseth does it, it looks like Elaine Bennis at a square dance.
Yeah, it looks like the movie was about to introduce a character that can control Pete's mind, right?
Like, he was trying to impress Tony Robbins at a firewalk over the coals by doing the grapevine thing and the advance. But then Pete got confused by the complicated pattern of the grapevine thing.
Left,
which
then,
is
right? Jesus
left
Christ.
Front, right? Yeah.
So, yeah, but apparently humiliating exercise videos come in threes. Because after all this was made public, Pete somehow decided again to work out with the troops, this time at Guantanamo Bay. And listeners, believe me when I say that the video we saw of it was one of the most egregious things to ever come out of Guantanamo Bay, okay? Yeah. It started with a video that he posted wherein, in the words of the enthusiastic tweet from Department of War Rapid Response, quote, crushed 44 reps on the bench, end quote. The video showed something quite a bit less than that. He crushes one rep,
I guess. Does he crush it, though?
No, not really. Okay. He does one rep, and really not even that. And then after that, he decides that lifting the weight all the way up is for idiots. It's coming back down anyway. So he lifts it less and less with each successive rep until he's sort of just bouncing it off his chest as one might bounce a baby on their knee. The bar is also, by the way, dangerously diagonal by rep number 6. He was clearly going for 50 of what appears to be like 100 pounds, if that, and could not put the bar back himself without some help at number 44, despite kicking his feet around like he was being strangled.
It looked like a torture, yeah.
When you watch the video, you say to yourself, Oh, he's not good at anything.
Yes, right.
Okay, I feel like the Marines at Gitmo could get him to do a waterboarding TikTok. Because this was close.
Yeah, right.
And if they put it on OnlyFans too, I will subscribe to
yes.
that. I'm not
Again,
going on TikTok.
I'll slide paper back and forth. There's also, there's an additional exercise that you see briefly in the viral video, and I don't know what you would call it. He's holding a couple of maybe 25-pound dumbbells, and he's squatting, and then he'll stand up, and he'll raise them above his head. Or that's the idea, anyway. We'll raise them above his nose. Anyway, in the short clip we see, he's got his wrist locked so far back that he's basically bearing the dumbbell's weight with his neck.
It's the opposite of wrist control. What's
yes.
it? It's wrist chaos.
Yes.
It's cuck wrist. It's the best.
Bottom line, there's a reason I don't dance in public. There's a reason Heath doesn't do pull-ups on video. There's a
or
reason
anywhere.
Eli doesn't care if he's humiliated. There was no other way to end that fucking sentence. Damn it. And as much as it might not seem newsworthy to make fun of Pete Hegseth's bench press technique or bench shove technique, I don't know what to call it even, we need to keep in mind that working out is something that Pete Hegseth has devoted a lot of his life to being good at. Running military is not so much, and he's this bad at the thing he's good at.
Yeah, he's in charge of our entire military. Hopefully we're not
sure
doing
is.
Anything important right now. And on that note, we're going to close it out. Thanks to No Illusions, thanks to Eli Bosnick, and thanks to all the listeners who liked us and followed
thanks
us.
Thanks to Heath Enright. We never
hey,
say it.
That's thanks. True. I've been there too. And yeah, thanks for following us on the internets. Please keep doing that. Please keep listening, and please keep telling your friends. And if you find the naive stupidity of our giving away a free show business model to be oddly
awesome.
Charming, you can send us gifts of money at patreon.com/skeptocrat. Just like Leslie Kavara, Totes Not a Robot with some caps and not caps and periods, Lea Culpa, Leap is a Cinematic Masterpiece, Colossin, Michelle P., Sarah, Keith Bohannon, Blad Vig. If you can pronounce Themyscira, you can pronounce my name, Sira. Okay. Andy Siner, Jan Berlacher, Captain Argus Firecrotch, Snickerdoodle, Mel Ader, Amariel, Sam, the Cleveland Cynic, nice, Hannah Blas, Christian Hofstadter, Hercinian, Will McLeod, John in Seattle, Daedalus's Dream, Becca Monster, Kurt Robichaud, Jonathan Hendershot, Lon, Klaus Hinze, Katie Mayu, Freak Speely, okay, nice, Spoonerism, William Koch, I think not related to the Koch brothers, Jamie Reed, Mini Olay.
I'm just guessing.
And
if you are,
I hope you're giving us Koch brothers money. I
yeah.
really, really do. That'd be
we'll
great.
We'll change this whole fucking show. I'll record this episode.
Okay, maybe we got some Koch money.
You'll get kicked in the nuts by Travis Kelce anyway.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, yeah. Go ahead, get back on Kelce. Andy Lentz, Skeptilicious, All Darn Davey, Conditioned Gamer, Heretic Rick, Charles James, My Dog Is More Sentient Than Claude, DRG Dragon, Tim and Mary Paragoy, Leon, Pugin, Larry, Lilith210, John Hack, Alex, Decomp Devil, Michael Usaki, Sterling, Rebecca Woodward, probably related to Woodward and Bernstein, that Woodward, if I had to guess. Pretty cool. Cotton Rob and Tyler Alex Allen.
Heath, do you have a post-it note that says do a fun fact every 5 minutes?
I'm gonna write that down now just in case it makes sense later. Yeah, that's awesome. Everybody I just mentioned, you all get early access to our IPO right before we hit the NASDAQ.
Oh.
Get excited. Special price. And whether or not you're feeling financially benevolent like those fine people, if you enjoyed our brand of whimsy and you'd like to hear more dick jokes free of charge, check out our brother and sister shows, The Scathing Atheist, God Off Movies, D&D Minus, and Citation Needed. Available in all the podcast places. We just have one last thing. Let's compliment that pianist. Special thanks to Ryan Slonick of Evil Giraffes on Mars. He is the creator of the virtuosic musical stylings you heard today, which were used with permission. You should definitely check him out using the links we'll provide or by Googling the only band called Evil Giraffes on Mars. Until next time, catchphrase sign off.
Yeah. think we're going to have to do a make good because we talked about penis mutilation?
I'm certain.
No, they said we could talk about penis mutilation.
I don't think they said that.
I'm certain we will have to do that.
Question.
Remember that when they made those meetings mandatory and they were and then we just did that and they were like, you don't have to come to these meetings anymore.
Yeah. Yeah, we like got out of jury duty.
Yeah,
yeah, right.
Real
right.
Hard.
So how many times can we talk about penis mutilation? What like, so describe the level of penis mutilation where we have to get to.
Let's establish a penis mutilation scale. You say what's medium and what's extra and what's low, and we'll go from there.
Here's what you need to understand about the Wool Dasher Mizzle. Why are you crying? Quince, less urine than Elon Musk.
They insisted on being introduced by how much less urine they had.
That's their copy. That's the claim of Quince.
Just reading the
business.
The copy.
As a paid representative of Quince, I'm telling them that their official statement.
They're going to call us into another meeting and then immediately have us leave.
We haven't even gotten to the penis mutilation yet.
The preceding podcast was a production of Puzzle and Thunderstorm, LLC. Copyright 2026. All rights reserved.